Come on, Pippo. Yeah. Let's cheer up for Daniel, because he's first time speaker, and everything's failing, and it's off to a good start.
Yeah.
Come on, big applause.
Thank
you're doing
you.
Well. You're doing awesome. And you know, the only certain thing about technology is going to fail exactly when it doesn't need to.
Yeah, like I think I said already, flakiness is not only happening in tests, obviously, right? So. So while we're waiting for this thing to happen, I could ask a question about who actually has an idea what a flake would be in testing. Okay, I should just repeat what you're going to say. Yeah, go ahead. You probably, I don't know. So you have an idea, but you don't want to tell me.
It's an unreliable test with a non-deterministic result.
Exactly. So to me, or I think to most people that agree about this topic, a flaky test is a test that fails and passes in successive runs without changing any code, neither testing code nor the underlying production code. Okay. So, yeah, this talk will be about flaky tests. Yeah?
Can I ask the definition and challenges a little bit? Because what you defined, what you said, can also be about the bug in the software.
Yeah, of course. Flaky behavior is not determined by just being the test being flaky, but also the software. But I would divide those two into different categories, and how they are going to be handled is differently. So, but let's wait. So. I'm going to start with the introduction. My name is Daniel Hiller. I'm working at Red Hat. I'm working on the upstream Qubit project, and there I'm maintaining the Qubit CI system. This talk will be about flaky tests and how we are actually going to handle them in our community of supporters for the Qubit contributors. So I don't say I have the silver bullet for handling that. I would be happy to have any input from you folks and how we can improve. And I would actually also want to have some kind of extended Q&A session if the time is still there. Somehow, so that you might talk about what you have experienced and how you are going to handle it. Just as a quick thing, how I think this should be going. I'm going to start with what a flake is, but yeah, you described it perfectly already, so it's fine. And then what the impact of flakes is. And then how we are doing, or how we can find flakes somehow, and then at the last how a flake process works and what tools we do have that support this. In the end, I just want to describe what we're aiming to do in the future to improve this.
I just don't have internet in my laptop for some reason.
Oh no!
I have the slides on my email.
Okay.
I just need a way to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going really terribly wrong. But yeah, I'm sorry for all that. By the way, a packed room, I didn't expect that, to be honest. So thank you all for coming. Really great.
Come on, I'm going to help you out, don't worry. So tell me kind of a little bit more until we wait for the slides. Kind of give us a hint as to what you wanted to show us and just tell us the story about it.
Yeah,
without the slides.
Just going to open it a bit because so I can see.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah. I was supposed to talk about.
You know, pretend I'm stupid and I have no idea what's flaky, and just, you know, tell it to me.
So I told you already about the agenda. And yeah, the question of flakes was already answered. I have two other questions. So that one is somehow like a little bit suggestive, I guess. So who's saying standing flakes is important? Like, put your hand up if you don't. Who? Yeah, of course. Who thinks handling of flakes is important? Okay. Oh. Yeah, I thought about that. So, thank you. You saved my day. Do you have a USB port?
Is it work?
Well, I hope so. One second, it's on. Then you need to put in presentation mode.
Where is the presentation mode?
There is on the right. Should be presentation. Yeah, okay. That should be okay.
Okay, awesome. Now it works.
Yeah. Okay. So the questions we already had. Another question: who has to deal with flakes on a regular basis? Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I expected something like that. So, yeah, like you correctly already said, flakes are caused either by production code, which is a bug, of course, or also by flaky test code. This is also a bug, but it's handled differently, like I already said. So we are using Prowl for our CI system, which comes from the Kubernetes ecosystem. I'm not sure whether you're familiar with it, but it's pretty flexible, and it can just start jobs from GitHub events, which is exactly what we want and what we need. This picture actually shows on the top, for example, there is the commit ID. I don't even see it like that there where I'm pointing. This is the commit ID. And these are the job runs that are defined, so like the jobs on the CI system. And this, of course, is a fail job, and these are successful jobs. So obviously, you can see, like, this is the PR history for one of our PRs inside the Kubernetes CI. And what you can see here is that, of course, there is jobs all run on the same commit ID, but some failed and some succeeded. And that's exactly how we see where we have our flakiness. Oh, wait a second, that's the wrong direction. Okay, so there is a really interesting survey, which is a meta survey about flakiness in testing, which is just called the Survey of Flaky Tests. Not really impressive name, but great stuff inside there. Something like that. There you can read that 79% of the flakes were false alarms, and more than 50% of flakes could not be reproduced in production. In isolation, sorry, which of course leads us to the conclusion that ignoring flaky tests is okay, right? It doesn't, of course. So when we're talking about CI, we want to have a reliable signal of stability in our CI. So because, of course, we want to know whether we can ship our product or not. And so any failed test run signals us as the CI maintainers that the product is unstable and that we can't ship it. So if we are having flakes in our production system, of course, they give us a wrong signal, like that the product is unstable and that we can ship, which we later then have to verify by the test code what exactly got wrong. And then we notice it's a flaky test. So this has wasted, of course, a lot of time. So not only does it waste the time of the developers themselves who have to look at the test results somehow and determine whether this is a flaky test or not, but it's also like when you have a CI that is somehow determining whether a PR can get merged via the test result, and then you have a test result, of course, the merge will not go through. So this causes friction by the developers who have then somehow maybe reissue another test. So if they see it's flaky, if there is nothing to fix, then they would just retest, which somehow, sometimes you would just think, okay, there is flakiness, I'm just going to retry, not even looking at the test results somehow, which I would call the retest trap. And we have actually had retests the highest number I've been seen like 25 times testing and retest on the same commit. I have to stay here? Okay. Okay. and also a very bad thing is, like, I'm not sure, I guess any CI system has something like an acceleration system where, for example, it's like testing like multiple Git commits at once so that it can merge them all together. And of course, if there is a flaky test, this acceleration effect will just be reversed. It will not be effective. Yeah, like I said, another wasted thing. So also, flaky tests cause trust issues at the developers themselves because they, of course, lose the trust in automated testing, which is really sad because that's all that we want to do. We want to trust the test, but if we can't, then of course, we're just ignoring test results, which is not a good idea. So we want to minimize the impact in our CI so that people don't experience that much friction. time flies. What we do there is we quarantine those tests. We put them out of the set of stable tests and put them in another set so that they are not run during pull request runs. But we only want to do that as early as possible when we detect the flakiness, but only as long as necessary, because tests on themselves, of course, have value. So otherwise, they wouldn't be there. What do we need for that? We need some mechanism where we can put a test from the set of stable tests to the set of quarantine tests. Of course, we also need a report over the flakiness, so we can triage which flaky tests we need to act upon first. If we have a lot of flaky tests, that matters. So because the higher the flakiness of the test is, of course, the higher is the impact. Lots of data, because of course you need to somehow analyze whether a test is even flaky or not. So, as I already said, I already described this. This is like the latest commit on a merge PR where we had some flaky test or some failing test runs, which later on got green on the same commit, so no changes on the code. So, this is not, of course, not saying us that it is actually flaky, but it might be flaky. And like you said, it could either be in production code or in the test code itself. But that doesn't matter in the end. The problem that we have is the friction in CI and the wasted resources there. So our flake process is pretty rough, I'd say, or pretty easy. So we have regular meetings where we look at the results and at the flakes, and then we decide what we want to do with those flakes. So first of all, of course, you have to know whether a test is flaky or not. You're looking at the test results and deciding whom you should contact so that he fixes that. Because we don't fix the tests ourselves, we let the developers do that. Because, they created their mess. They should clean it up. A problem is, of course, when people are gone from the project, then someone else has to care. But yeah. So we hand the flaky test to the developers, and at the time when it's been corrected, we bring those tests back in. So the tools that we have is like we have the main thing that decides whether a test is being run between for the pull request. It's just a note on the test itself that is like, there is in the test name, there is this quarantine word, which is the keyword which makes the test get ignored for the pull request runs. we still do run those tests to have this stability signal, but not in the pre-submits, which are required for the pull request merges, but in the periodic runs that are run, I think, 3 times a day. So that we still have a signal when we can take a test back in order to have the value added again. So another thing is, of course, you need to report. So this is a not really nice looking but efficient thing, like a heat map. So where you see where the action is going on, you see like the more reddish the colors are getting, the worse the problem is. This is in I can't go there. So like on the top, you can just see on which day how many failures were occurring. And there is another like axis, which is the per lane failure, so that we can pretty much see which lane is flaky and on which was the biggest impact for everything. This is the first time I'm using this, sorry. I'm just always switching the directions. Okay, this is a detailed report about how flaky a test is or how flaky those tests are. This is ordered by the number of failures occurring per test. This is a bit overwhelming, I think, but on the left column, you just see the test name, and on the upper column, you see the number, the test lanes that are versions of the latest three. Like we have a lot of test lanes that have different SIGs which are maintaining them, and this obviously creates a matrix of like at least 12 really important lanes which absolutely have to be stable. Yeah, and this helps us like finding where which tests we should look at and quarantine or which we shouldn't. We have also long-term metrics where we can decide how we were doing in the past. So like at least everyone, of course, wants to know whether they are improving or getting worse in handling flakes. So we have long-term metrics where we can look at how we were doing. So how many merges per day, for example, or how many merge PRs with zero retest, which is the thing that we are measuring currently against the most, because obviously, that number should be like 28 of 28, but we seldom reach that, like flakies. We also have a small report over the tests that have been quarantined so that we can find them quickly, because it's like grepping over the code base is also, of course, doable, but it is easier to just have some report that we can look at straight away during our meetings. And then finally, we have all the test grid, which also collects all the periodic results so that we can deduce whether the tests have been stable or not. So this is the tool, I guess, that guys from the Kubernetes ecosystem know that, because Kubernetes also uses test grid for collecting all the test results so that you can quickly drill down. And we have also established another lane that checks the test for stability, which does a thing that that makes test dependencies, for example, visible. I guess you know what a test dependency is: some test that hasn't cleaned up and leaves a mess for other tests, and then influencing them, and then they might be failing, or the other way around, they might not be was already sufficient for the following test. And if you are just randomizing the test order, you catch those cases, which is like you have to have isolated test cases, right? And also it tries to run it 5 times, because like I said before in this meta report, a bit more than 80% of all the tests have been, of the flaky tests, have been failing after about 5 times. This is not that you catch all of them, but the majority. That's just a CI search tool. So in a nutshell, we do in regular intervals meetings that we look over the data somehow. So like I described before. What we want to do is, of course, we want to collect even more data. Like we want to run the majority of tests in the same way as we are doing in the flake lane, like running them 5 times after another, and also randomizing always the order so that we have a better picture over how flaky our code base is. And yeah, of course, we want to avoid this retest problem where you blindly just retest your thing. So we are looking for ways to just directly find that case. So it's pretty, I've been running through pretty quickly. Any questions? Yeah.
Thank you. So you've been talking about the responsibility of devs to fix the flakiness. Mm-hmm. So this kind of assumes that the flakiness is introduced either by new tests or by changes on tests or changes on the code base. But what about flakiness that is introduced by your infrastructure actually, like network latency or things like that? Do you have those problems, or is it something that you...
I didn't get the last... Could you repeat the last sentence? Sorry.
Sorry. So you imply that the flakiness can either be introduced in new tests or changes in tests or changes in the code base. Have you ever been confronted with flakiness introduced by your infrastructure, your like network latency or things like that, and how do you detect them, and how do you...
Of course. That is also a problem, but when you have flakiness in your test infrastructure or even failures in the test infrastructure, that's an entirely different problem. And what we have observed there is that a lot of tests start to fail then. And that's why we look at, first of all, when we have rough estimate of like have more than 20 tests failing in one run, that might likely be because the test infrastructure is failing. And actually, we decided to just quickly verify that there is something going on in the infrastructure, and then just disregard that run. And in earlier days, we had that problem pretty much often, but in recent days, it hasn't been happening anymore. Or much less. Let's put it like that. Of course. What we are having to test are E2E tests. Like Kubert is a complex system. It's an addition on Kubernetes so that you can run virtual machines. And of course, for testing that, for testing E2E, you need a full Kubernetes cluster on which you will deploy the Kubert. And that's what we're doing in the CI. So we are actually spinning up some, I would say, a frozen cluster, like virtualized nodes that have been frozen and that are spun up on demand. Like this takes around 1.5 minutes to spin up such a cluster. And then you run all those tests somehow, and we have three versions of these.
Thank you very much. We are running out of time. So
yeah.
You can continue. I'll say thank you.
You can
thank
you very much. Thank you.